Good morning. I will call to order this remote hearing of the House Commerce Committee and ask Mr. Dockendorf to please take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Present.
Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll present.
Representative Barr. Representative Carlson.
Carlson's present.
Representative Dabney.
Dabney present.
Representative Elkins. Representative Haley.
Present.
Carlson present. Representative.
Thank you. Representative Cagle.
Cagle present.
Representative Lee. Representative Lilly. Representative Lislegard. Representative Lucero.
Double duty with Public Safety Committee this morning.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Farr.
Farr present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Tice.
Tice present.
Representative Cotiza Watoon.
Present.
Representative Lee. Looks like he just joined. Representative Lee.
Lee present.
Representative Lilly. And Representative Lislegard.
Okay, quorum is present. Our first item of business is approval of our minutes from earlier this week on March 23rd, 2022. Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon, do you have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would move approval of the minutes from March 23rd.
Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon moves approval of the minutes from March 23rd, 2022. Discussion to that motion. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes from March 23rd, 2022 are approved. The first bill on our agenda today is House File 3595. I will move House File 3595 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Welcome to the committee, Representative Edelson. I understand you have the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape you'd like the committee to consider it in. I will move the A1 amendment. Representative Edelson, do you want to discuss the amendment briefly?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The amendment is an agreement between the industry and the Board of Pharmacy and Agriculture.
Wonderful. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails and the A1 is adopted. Representative Edelson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Bear with me, I have a pretty big cold. So House File 3595 regulates products we are seeing on the market, such as Delta 8 and Delta 10 products. Across Minnesota, these are popping up at every store in every community that is represented on this committee, but also at the legislature. They are can be found in your local markets, to gas stations, to tobacco shops. Delta 8 and Delta products often contain 25 milligrams of THC content and can have packaging that is colorful. I just sent, Mr. Chair, I just sent to your CA, Mr. Brown, just some examples of pictures that I'm hoping he can send. Some of the packaging looks like Sour Patch Kids. And so what we're seeing is in the health committee, I discussed how we're seeing poison control numbers go up with young people. There's some confusion in terms of the 2018 Federal Farm Bill that was passed, as well as the CBD bill that we passed here at the legislature in this body. And there was confusion around whether or not these products are legal. So what we're seeking to do, because it would be a big task to just go and remove every single thing off the shelf, is to find a path forward to keep consumers safe while also making sure that we allow these products, but we are keeping kids safe, because I think the poison control numbers even are underrepresented with that. So this bill seeks to regulate a few things. So it would require child safety packaging, ban packaging that targets kids. It would require products to be sold to persons 21 and older. It adds labeling and testing requirements. It limits the dose to 5 milligrams. And what is currently, again, being sold is about 25 milligrams, which is pretty high and not a good scenario scenario to be in. Parts of this bill were heard in the Ag Committee, and the Department of Agriculture, as well as the Board of Pharmacy, are here for questions if members have them. And then with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to go to my testifiers.
Wonderful. We have two testifiers. First, Dr. Cody Weiberg from the Board of Pharmacy. Dr. Weiberg.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dr. Cody Weiberg. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy. I think I'm just mainly here to answer questions, but I will testify in favor of this bill on behalf of the Board of Pharmacy itself, which considered this bill at their public meeting a week ago Wednesday and went on record as supporting it. I think this brings needed regulation to the industry. The reason we're involved at all is technically these products fall under the legal definition of the word drug that's found in the chapter we administer. And we would like to see that there are some better testing, labeling, and packaging requirements to protect the public. This bill also corrects an issue that was created by a Minnesota State Court of Appeals decision that called into question the legality of products that the legislature voted to make legal in 2019. That would be non-intoxicating cannabinoids derived from hemp. That State Court of Appeals decision could be interpreted that even if there were minute amounts of THC in these products, but it met all the other requirements established by the legislature, it'd be a Schedule I controlled substance and therefore a felony to either sell or possess it. So certainly can ask or answer any questions there might be about the technical details in the bill that relate to the Board of Pharmacy.
Thank you much. Our next testifier is Stephen Brown. Mr. Brown.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair Stevenson, and the members of the committee for allowing me to testify. My name is Stephen Brown. I'm a board member of the Minnesota Cannabis Association. We represent hemp-only businesses, not tobacco shops or vape shops. The Minnesota Cannabis Association is in support of the HF 3595 bill. We believe this bill will help the hemp industry grow, provide better consumer safety, and allow for product innovation. Having clear guidelines of allowing edibles and food will create new jobs, new businesses, support hemp farmers by increasing demand of raw goods, support product innovation, and promote safer products in the marketplace. According to the hemp industry reports, edibles are the fastest growing segment in the hemp industry. I appreciate the agencies and state representatives for being open and finding a win-win specifically for the hemp-only businesses. Over the last few years, parts of the hemp industry have been operating in a gray area. As hemp operators, it was tough to navigate. Some companies pushed the bar really, really far. Some did not test products for safety. Some companies sold products to underage kids just to make a quick buck. And some products that were sold looked like cereal my children eat every day. This needs to stop. Bad actors made the industry look terrible. HF 3595 will help clear out the bad actors by requiring 21 plus full panel testing, guidelines for milligrams of THC in hemp edibles, and require childproof packaging, and also limit the characteristics of products that attract children, and provide a fresh start for operators who want to be in the hemp industry for years to come. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify.
Thank you. We do have one more testifier. I'm not sure if she's on the Zoom. Sue Sint, are you on here, Ms. Sint?
Yes, I am present.
Great. Please proceed.
Well, first I have to apologize for coming up as host. I don't know how to change
my name. Don't worry about it.
Thank you very much for taking the time to hear us today. I really appreciate that. I represent the coalition of like tobacco shops and vape shops that sell these products. And our concern really lies with public safety and access to youth. And as Mr. Weiberg mentioned, if we fix this so that these products are available, they're legal for consumers to possess consistent with federal regulation, then it only makes sense that these products are able to be purchased in Minnesota. Feel very strongly about creating guardrails and setting up a system to keep these away from youth. However, if we set up, if the limits are such that you overregulate the product, people aren't going to want to purchase them, and they're very easily able to just drive to local neighboring states and buy these same products. People can also just go online and buy them, so it's just going to increase an illicit market. I fear that if you overregulate them, it's just going to hurt the industry, and that's just going to be damaging to the local economy. There's millions of dollars that we want to keep in Minnesota, along with the tax revenue, and more importantly, the illicit market. We just have a great concern that products need to be available in retail establishments so we can keep them away from youth and out of the illicit market where nobody is checking age. So I realize this is a difficult issue to grapple with, but we need to consider what is consistent with federal law and how can we keep the economy in Minnesota healthy and strong and help all the small businesses, primarily minority-owned businesses, small hemp farms around the state. It's a fledgling industry that we're just trying to develop. So with that, I'll thank you for taking the time to hear what I had to say.
Thank you very much. That concludes testimony. We will now move to member discussion and questions. Discussion to the bill. Seeing no discussion, any closing comments, Representative Edelson?
I ask members for your support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With that, Representative Edelson renews her motion. I'll renew my motion, excuse me. Representative Edelson is unfortunately not a member of this committee. Maybe I'll get her to join next biennium. But I will renew my motion that House File 3595, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Mr. Dockendorf will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Stevenson, aye. Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, aye.
O'Driscoll, aye. Representative Barr.
Aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Dabney.
Dabney votes aye.
Dabney, aye. Representative Elkins. Representative Elkins. Representative Haley. Representative Cagle.
Cagle, aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Lislegard is excused. Representative Lucero.
Lucero, yes.
Lucero, aye. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Farr.
Farr, aye.
Farr, aye. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Tice.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye. Representative Elkins. Representative Elkins.
Elkins. Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley.
With 16 ayes and zero nays, the motion prevails, and House File 3595 is recommended to be referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you again, Representative Edelson. The next bill on our agenda today is House File 4031 from our own Representative Lilly. Chair Lilly, would you like to move your bill?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Chair Lilly moves that House File 4031 be recommended to be placed on the general register. And Representative Chair Lilly, I understand you have the DE1 amendment.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. It's a DE because, we're just cleaning up everything and getting in shape. And then during the testimony, we can kind of get into deeper detail of the whole bill.
Sounds wonderful. Any discussion to the DE1 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails and the DE1 amendment is adopted. Chair Lilly, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good morning. The bill that we have today is it's kind of a neat one. It's being brought forward by the Commerce Department. It's an effort to kind of to be offering better products in Minnesota that can serve Minnesotans that are in transitions, you know, with insurance needs in their life. So what they're trying to do is to come up with a more affordable option for long-term care. A lot of people that are wealthier in Minnesota might have access to a product, but this is trying to hit to get the people that to offer a product in the middle a more affordable option. So that's currently not available in the market. So it's actually Minnesota trying to be a leader in the country. And so I have some testifiers this morning, and I wonder if they could do a deeper dive, if that's all right, Mr. Chair and members, and to kind of get into the product. We have Ms. Bassett from the Commerce Department and Mr. Anderson, and I'm not sure who wants to go first, but if they want to do a deeper dive, and then we'll stand for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. Well, on my list, I have Helen Bassett first, so we'll go to Ms. Bassett first.
Well, great. Good morning, and thank you, Chair Stevenson, for hearing this bill and members. For the record, my name is Helen Bassett, and I'm the Government Affairs Liaison within the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Thank you, Representative Lilly, for bringing this bill, and you, Chair Stevenson, for hearing the bill. We're here today to provide more information on House File 4031, Regulatory Flexibility, commonly known as Life Stage. I'm here today with Fred Anderson from the department. He's Commerce's Chief Life Actuarial, and so Mr. Anderson will walk us through and highlight the bill. Thank you, Chair.
All right, next we have Fred Anderson. Mr. Anderson.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. As Helen mentioned, my name is Fred Anderson. I'm the Chief Life Actuary at the Minnesota Department of Commerce. I'll provide a very brief overview of the need for a statute revision to clarify the approvability of certain innovative long-term care insurance products. As background, insurance companies file innovative products with the Department of Commerce, and Commerce reviews and approves the products if they are compliant with statutes. There's interest by the life insurance industry in develop innovative long-term care products to address non-medical needs, such as nursing home and home health care as baby boomers age. There are certain products that combine life insurance and long-term care that are already clearly allowed. And as the representative mentioned, they tend to target the higher income market. And we've noted there is potential interest in developing a product for the middle income market. There's a concept called life stage, which acts as term life insurance at early ages and provides long-term care at older ages. So it's at the different stages, it kind of meets the needs that tend to happen at those ages. And a statute revision is needed to clarify the approvability of this type of product. The bill language is similar to language that we see in Minnesota Statute Section 62S.34, which allows the commissioner flexibility to approve innovative products in limited circumstances. With the bill, the company would demonstrate that a product filed with Commerce is not clearly approvable under existing statute, but that it also provides reasonable benefits and is in the best interest of the policyholder. It's anticipated that Commerce would approve such a product even if long-term care benefits are not immediately available in the product, because to keep premium rates reasonable to attract the middle income market, only the life insurance benefit would be available in early policy years. And as the representative mentioned, other states have expressed interest in following Minnesota's lead on this issue. And that concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. That concludes testimony on this bill. We'll now move to member discussion and questions. Discussion to the bill. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if this is for the bill author or for Commerce, but has the insurance industry expressed you know, interest or given you feedback in terms of, you know, their confidence and ability in writing this type of insurance that's described?
Chair Lilly, I don't know if you want to appoint to your testifiers or take a swing at that one yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's, I mean, I could kind of do it, but I think if you want a really good answer, I think the best is to work with Mr. Anderson, because he's, I believe they've reached out so to seeking this product. So, Mr. Anderson, if...
Mr. Anderson.
Okay, thank you, Representative. We have had initial discussions with industry. What we've heard is that they did not want to invest too much time into developing such a product until the legislation was adopted. But we expect there have been a lot of studies. There's an organization called Own Your Future, which is kind of a private-public cooperative led by the Department of Human Resources, which is our Department of Human Services, which has done a lot of research on this type of product, including the pricing and the risks and everything. It seems like a viable product, but I believe after this, assuming this legislation passes, we would then see more intense interaction between our agency and industry and figure out, you know, the appropriateness of products and their pricing.
Representative Rasmussen, any follow-up to that, or are you?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lucero.
Mr. Chair, and my question would be to the bill author. Can you just confirm if the bill is allowing regulatory flexibility, creating this new provision in the long-term care, or does your bill allow for a more broad regulatory flexibility into the future for a broader perspective on any product that the Commerce Department may deem necessary?
I'll pass that on to our Chair Lilly, but I just would add one thing you might want to do, Representative Lucero, is look at the distinction between the underlying bill and the DE, because I think I might be overinterpreting your question, but you might have had some of the same questions that I had, and they were kind of addressed by the DE. But Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I believe it's more narrow than to answer your question. But Mr. Anderson, again, I hate to keep passing it on. But
yeah, well, I also see Ms. Bassett is unmuted. I don't know if she wanted to comment on that.
No, actually, I'd like for Mr. Anderson to cover that for us.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Mr. Anderson.
Yes, this bill language intentionally and specifically addresses only products that would be some sort of combination of life insurance and long-term care. So if there was a product that was in any other category, then this language would not apply.
Representative Lucero, any follow-up?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that. So then the other question for the chair is, and I appreciate, not you, Chair, Chair Lilly. I appreciate, Chair Lilly, this bill. I think it's very important to have innovative products that allow for Minnesotans to have flexibility with the dynamics of the life experience, obviously. So it's been in my experience with several of my own family members that they've in the past had different types of long-term care policies. I don't know if they were dedicated or one that I think I even have on myself, a rider on one of my existing life insurance policies that permits me to take a certain percentage of the cash value of a life insurance policy. I don't know if it's 5%, 10%, or 15%, but I'm wondering of that rider that I currently already have and I've had for years on a policy, how is that distinguished from what this bill would allow?
Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lucero. It's a great question. I'm glad that we're working on this product. But again, I'm going to go to Mr. Anderson because it's kind of a neat just to wear a Minnesota brag for a second. Mr. Anderson's I'm hearing quite a bit of rumors about him that he's actually a national expert on this topic. So I won't even pretend to have any level of that knowledge. So I'm happily passing to Mr. Anderson.
Wonderful. Mr. Anderson.
Okay. Thank you, Representative. And I'm just doing my best, not necessarily the expert. So I'll mention two distinctions between the type of product that was mentioned and what we're focusing on here. One is that In the type of policy you mentioned, it's likely that throughout the duration of the policy, those long-term care benefits would be available. Whereas with the life stage product, due to the need to kind of hold costs down, the long-term care, the most common example would be the long-term care would be effective once you turn 65, and then life insurance would be cut off. So with the products available today, it's fairly likely the life insurance would be available, the duration of the policy, and the long-term care would be available, the duration of the policy. And the second distinction is the types of products that we're talking about here would not have a cash value. So there's a category of life insurance called term life insurance where the only benefit would occur if a death occurs. There would be no availability of cash. And that's an existing type of product, but again, that's targeting middle income market people who are looking for more affordable products.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all I have.
Representative Tice.
Good question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I basically just have a comment. I want to thank you, Representative Lilly, for bringing this forward. I've been very interested in what we're doing for long-term care. Several years ago, I was approached by a friend of mine who was working at Kohl's, and once she turned 65, she could no longer contribute to her, I think it was HSA, or maybe an IRA account or whatever it was. But when she reached the age of 65, she could no longer contribute. And I pursued it, and of course, it's a federal thing. They have to change rules on the federal level, and I haven't seen that happening. So you haven't heard much from me on this, but I think that it's time we start looking for some of these out-of-the-box ways in that we can convert things like an HSA or an IRA that we're doing for work that you cannot use or cannot contribute once you turn 65, using those for long-term care. You know, we're seeing a lot more seniors working, so if you can get a match from your employer, why wouldn't you do it? So seeing this really gives me encouragement that maybe we could move forward a little bit better. And since we have such a wonderful expert in Mr. Anderson, maybe we can pursue that sometime. However, I know this happens on the federal level and nothing happens. It's been 6 years maybe since I was looking into this. Nothing happens quick there. So thank you very much.
Yeah, nothing happens quick in the feds. That's for sure. Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess probably a couple of comments. Well, first, let me ask the question probably to you, Mr. Chair Stevenson. This is going to the general register from here. What's the path for the bill?
Thanks for the question. I think that, you know, if it can pass as a standalone, that's wonderful. You know, I in the time that I've been chair, we've had a regular practice of sending out bills like this to the general register, and if we can get floor time and get it passed, that's great. I also am expecting to have an omnibus, and I haven't decided what exactly I'll propose to put in that omnibus, but usually bills that are, you know, relatively non-controversial, we try to include them there as well, just to kind of belt and suspenders approach to make sure that we get it across the finish line.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With that being said, if this is included in the omnibus bill, I would highly suggest or really appreciate a couple of more amendments to this because, I mean, it's a short bill. So numbers 3 and 4 in the regulatory flexibility part, that's lines 1.11 and 1.12, both need to be tightened up a little bit because that's so vague. And I'm going to give you an example. So reasonable coverage. I used to have a high deductible health care plan, cost about $400 a month, but the deductible was $6,000 per individual, and I was really happy with that. Then it became outlawed. And then best interest of the insured, well, maybe I want something that's a little off or only covers specific things. That the best interest of the insured and the who's determining whether it's reasonable, those are extremely ambiguous terms. So if those can be tightened up a little bit, I'd really appreciate it.
I think that's really good feedback, Representative Barr. We'll keep that in mind. And if we're looking at the omnibus, I'm sure Chair Lilly will think about that as he looks at a potential floor vote. And, you know, now we're with the DE, it's different language in the House and the Senate. So maybe you're going to have a protracted conference committee on this bill. Lily. I don't know. Could be. I hope that you, if you do, you drive a tough bargain for the House language. I don't see any other members seeking recognition. Chair Lily, closing comments.
No, Mr. Chair, thank you for your time this morning. And that's, it seems to make a lot of sense to come up with a product that can help, you know, meet people, you know, the challenges as people transition in life. I, to me, it makes a lot of sense. So you can work with your insurance agent to kind of, you know, early in life, your priorities are different and then, you know, your needs. And then as you age, obviously things change. And so it makes a lot of sense to partner with your insurance folks and, you know, to have a product that works for you. But again, thank you for your time this morning. And I'm open to suggestions, of course.
And with that, Chair Lilly renews his motion that House File 4031 as amended be recommended to be placed on the general register. And Mr. Dockendorf will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Stevenson, aye. Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll votes aye.
O'Driscoll, aye. Representative Barr.
No.
Barr, no. Representative Carlson.
Aye. Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Dabney.
Dabney, aye.
Dabney, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley.
Haley, aye.
Haley, aye. Representative Cagle. Yes.
Cagle, aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Lislegard is excused. Representative Lucero.
Lucero, yes.
Lucero, aye. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Farr.
Farr, aye.
Farr, aye. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Tice.
Tice, aye.
With 16 ayes and one nay, the motion prevails, and House File 4031, as amended, is recommended to be placed in the general register. Thank you, Chair Lilly. The next item on our agenda is House File 3611. Welcome to the committee, Chair Moran. I will move House File 3611 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Chair Moran, I understand you have the A1 amendment. I will move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like to be considered. Chair Moran, do you have any other description of that amendment?
Well, what the amendment does is just updates the year from 2022 to 2023.
All right. Well, we're going to have really intense discussion on this amendment. Any discussion, members? Well, I think that's shocking that no one wants to talk about that. All in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Chair Moran, to your bill.
Thank you, and good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. So House File 3611 entails, you know, there's a lot of rare diseases that are very expensive to treat. There are affected Minnesota families and individuals who rely on third-party assistance to help offset their out-of-pocket costs. Many hit the maximum of $8,700 for an individual and $17,400 for a family each and every year. Now, some health insurance companies have taken aggressive steps to stop families from using out-of-pocket assistance that is intended to help them. Minnesotans have been stunned to find out that they owe money that has already been collected but not applied to their maximum out-of-pocket cost calculation. This new practice known as the accumulator adjuster is wrong. It is misguided. It is harmful to families, and it should be banned here in Minnesota. The cost of health insurance premiums and out-of-pocket costs to patients are incredibly expensive and at an all-time high. The idea of insurance companies having the legal right to deny third-party payments to help families who need it is confounding and troubling. Copay assistance for a patient is intended to help patients afford the medication that they need to treat their medical conditions. By not allowing third-party assistance to count towards out-of-pocket maximum, otherwise stable patients may skip or discontinue treatment, which can lead to trips to emergency room or life-threatening complications. For many patients and families in the rare disease community,
These medications do not have generic equivalents and are the only options available to treat their life-threatening conditions. Chair Stevenson and my fellow Commerce Committee members, this bill and its Senate companion has bipartisan authors, and I ask for your vote in support of House File 3611, which will work to bring back and help families in need. There's a coalition of 30 patient organizations asking for our help. 12 states have already enacted this type of legislation to stand by their constituents, and it's time for us here in Minnesota to act now. Thank you so much. And I do believe I have some testifiers.
Thank you, Chair Moran. The first testifier we have is Justin Nelson. Mr. Nelson.
Thank you for your time today to speak about Bill HF3611, also known as the Copay Accumulator Adjuster Bill. My name is Justin Nelson, and I'm a patient that utilizes a high-cost medication that requires copay assistance to help with the cost of my medication. At present, insurance companies and pharmacy benefit managers allow copay assistance programs that help with the cost of rare and high-dollar drugs. However, do not allow them to contribute to the patient's accumulator. The accumulator impacts the patient and or family's deductible and out-of-pocket expenses. Insurers and pharmacy benefit managers often use the copay or often use the accumulator adjuster program in an attempt to steer patients and providers to generic medications that typically carry a significantly smaller cost. However, in these rare and complicated disease states, there are seldom generic medications available. Speaking for myself, I'm on a medication to treat a disease called psoriatic arthritis that costs approximately $6,000 every 12 weeks. It requires that I am monitored annually for tuberculosis, hepatitis C, HIV, and other diseases that could negatively impact my immune system. This medication is important to my health outcomes as it not only helps to clear up the psoriasis that you can see on my skin, which can impact my mental health and image of self, but it helps reduce the very painful and uncomfortable inflammation it causes in my joints. I am fortunate that my medication is not as expensive as those used to treat other diseases. Some of these medications can cost patients and families $25,000 a month. For most of us with these complicated medical conditions, we will be on these or similar medications for life, resulting in us needing to pay our out-of-pocket maximums each and every year. Finally, another negative impact of not allowing copay assistance to contribute to the patient's accumulator could result in a high dollar balance for the family or patient that must be met prior to their next medication fill. I am fortunate that I have exemplary health insurance through my employer that allows me to meet my deductible with minimal financial stress on myself. However, not every patient or family is able to do so. In Minnesota, maximum out-of-pocket expenses can be as high as $8,700. For an individual or $17,400 for a family. While I am speaking to you today representing myself, there are other rare disease populations that this bill would have a positive impact for any patient in Minnesota on a high dollar medication. Some of these diseases could be arthritis, cancer, HIV/AIDS, hepatitis C, hemophilia, and other bleeding disorders, and many more. Thank you for your time this morning and listening to the testimony for this extremely important and impactful piece of legislation. I would ask that you vote for HF3611 and NK and copay accumulator adjusters in Minnesota.
Thank you. The next testifier is Chris Manns. Mr. Manns.
Thank you, Chair Stephenson.
I apologize, Ms. Manns.
Oh, that's okay. I'm a girl. No, thank you, Chair Stephenson and members of the committee. My name is Chris Manns, and I serve on the Hemophilia Foundation of Minnesota Dakota's board, and I have 12-year-old twin boys, Evan and Tanner, who have severe hemophilia A. Evan and Tanner take hemophilia medication drugs twice a month to prevent their bleeding episodes. The medicine is administered as a shot, very similar to an insulin shot. The medicine is very effective and allows them to be physically active and live a normal lifestyle. You wouldn't even know that they have hemophilia other than the medical alert bracelet they wear on their wrist. Their hemophilia medication is very expensive and costs approximately $30,000 per month per child. There are no generic drugs available for hemophilia, so we do not have a less expensive option to treat their disease. I work for a very large Minnesota corporation. My employer only offers high deductible insurance plans to its employees. During 2021, the out-of-pocket maximum was for a family was $10,800, which I met at the beginning of the plan year with Evan and Tanner's first prescription fill. Because of this very large expense, our family relies on patient copay assistance programs provided by the drug manufacturer. Every year, I complete an application form and provide them with information in order to receive this copay assistance. This assistance helps defray the costs associated with these life-saving medications. During 2021 benefit plan year, I learned that my employer changed their health plan and they implemented a copay accumulator adjuster program. Mm-hmm. As a result of this plan change, my insurer received the benefit of the manufacturer's assistance of $10,800. However, they did not credit this assistance towards my deductible or out-of-pocket max. Since they did not apply the assistance towards my out-of-pocket, I was also responsible for paying the $10,800. So the insurer benefited from the copay assistance paid by the pharmaceutical manufacturer, plus they benefited from the deductible paid by me. I did not receive any benefit of this copay assistance. I did not want to compromise my son's treatments, so I ensured that I paid this amount. If they don't receive their treatment, the risk of having an untreated bleed is high and would compromise their health. It would result in ER visits, which would be much more costly than the medications that they receive. House File 3611 would disallow the use of these copay accumulator adjuster programs and would give the benefit of the assistance back to the family where it belongs. I ask you to move House File 3611 forward, and I appreciate your time to hear today to hear my story and allow me to testify. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Manns. We'll now move to public testimony. The first testifier is Dan Andreessen from the Council of Health Plans. Mr. Andreessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Dan Andreessen with the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, trade association for the nonprofit insurers in Minnesota, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, Health Partners, Medica, Sanford Health Plan, and UCARE. Thank you for the opportunity to testify to respectfully express our opposition to House File 3611. First of all, I just want to be clear, plans in the fully insured market do allow enrollees to use manufacturer copay assistance and coupons. So if a manufacturer is offering these and patients want to use them, they're able to do so today. This is a financial arrangement that's between a manufacturer, a pharmacy, and a patient. The insurance company is not involved in this process. However, these are not counted as payments toward the member's deductible because the members themselves are not the ones making the payment. So when health plans in the fully insured market create their plans, they have to adhere to federal requirements to fit these into the metal levels. You've probably heard them discuss before, the bronze, silver, gold, platinum level plans. And each of those state, the insurance company pays a certain amount and you pay a certain amount. So in the bronze, the insurance company pays 60%, the patient pays 40%. Compare that to gold, it's 80% for the insurance company, 20% for the enrollee. So what is paid by the enrollee, that is their deductible, and that's the set amount of money that they're agreeing to pay for their out-of-pocket healthcare expenses. And so who's making these payments is especially important for high deductible plans with health savings accounts, because enrollees are granted the tax benefit of an HSA by the IRS, assuming that they're the ones making the payments for their deductible. Now, we agree that with the proponent's testimony that prescription drugs cost too much. However, there's no language in the bill that addresses that root cause of the problem and what price is being charged by manufacturer for their drugs. In fact, assistance programs can end up contributing to the rising cost of prescription drugs. Assistance programs are typically used by manufacturers for the most expensive drugs in the market. And manufacturers are using these to promote their drugs and encourage patients to stay on their particular drug. Now, these programs have a consequence of incentivizing the use of an expensive drug when there might be a cheaper alternative on the market. It may not just be a generic, it might be another brand drug that's less expensive. Or maybe there's a new therapy on the market that is less expensive. And these programs are being used by manufacturers to gain and hold on to patients regardless of whether this is the right medication for them. So So instead of these funds being used to create these assistance programs, we would argue that manufacturers should just lower the prices for everybody. I do want to mention, in closing up here, there was in some of the materials that were posted for the committee, there's being a claim made that health plans are double dipping or profiting off of these programs. I just want to kind of walk you through how this works. So a pharmacy buys a drug and they hold on to it whenever a patient comes in. So as a patient, you get a prescription from your doctor. That prescription goes to the pharmacy. And the pharmacy says, okay, well, we're going to look up your insurance. We'll bill your insurance for whatever your plan is. And as a patient, you have a certain out-of-pocket you have to pay. So you go to the counter to pick that up. Now the manufacturer may jump in and say, hey, we're going to send you, the pharmacist, money to pay down part of that expense. So then that money goes to the pharmacy, and then the patient would pay whatever is left. So health plans are not involved in that financial situation at all. We're not seeing that money. So I just want to make sure we're clear about that situation. So in closing, rather than seeking the approach of 3611, we would urge the committee to instead develop such solutions that is going to actually put pressure on drug manufacturers to lower their prices and try to address the root cause of healthcare affordability. Thank you.
Thank you. The next testifier is Alex Summer. Mr. Summer.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Sure can.
All right. Thank you. My name is Alex Summer, and I represent Prime Therapeutics, pharmacy benefit manager based here in Minnesota and owned by 19 not-for-profit Blue Cross and Blue Shield health insurers. Our mission is simple, and it's to help people get the medicine they need to feel better and live well, which means the right medicine, the right time and place for the best possible price. House File 3611 complicates that. And what this bill does is it necessitates the perpetuation and further proliferation of a scheme that has the effect of protecting continued drug price inflation and the result raising the overall cost of healthcare for Minnesota patients. Coupons address a symptom of the underlying problem, high drug prices. As Mr. Andreessen said, high drug prices are ultimately set by the manufacturer. They and they alone set the price that is going to be paid for that drug. Sometimes the market can work where there are different competitive products. So whether it's a generic that comes onto the market to lower the cost of a brand drug, or if there are different brand drugs within a certain class, those products act as competitors, and we can use that to drive competition and lower the price of the drug that's going to be paid. But again, still, in that class, that therapy that a patient needs, they can get, it's just at the best possible price. Now, where the market might not otherwise bear the price it's set by the manufacturer, meaning that a different brand or generic drug is a payer's preferred product at a lower total cost of the plan, manufacturers are using coupons to manipulate that market and drive market share without lowering the actual price of the product itself. And the cost of that market manipulation to manufacturers? Nothing, because they're still being made whole on the full price of the drug. The net effect of driving to higher cost products is necessarily higher drug spend. And with higher drug spend, that means a higher overall cost of providing a health benefit. In short, higher drug spend equals higher premiums. For these reasons, we oppose House File 3611, but we welcome the opportunity to continue discussing this issue with the proponents and Representative Moran moving forward. And I'll be happy to answer any questions as we move through this. Thank you.
Thank you. Last, we have Michelle Mack from PMCA. Ms. Mack.
Good morning, Chairman Stevenson and members of the committee. My name is Michelle Mack, and I'm a senior director at the Pharmaceutical Care Management Association, or PCMA. PCMA represents America's PBMs, or pharmacy benefit managers, and sorry about all the acronyms. PCMA appreciates the opportunity to provide testimony on House File 3611 and respectfully opposes. I want to emphasize at the outset of my testimony that PCMA does not oppose true means-tested patient assistance programs that help individuals afford their prescription drugs. There's an important difference between means-tested patient assistance programs and copay coupons, which are targeted to individuals with health insurance. The unfettered price increases of prescription drugs put patients at risk and health plan sponsors in the difficult position of either having to cut benefits or increase premiums, copays, and deductibles. While health plans pay the vast amount of their members' prescription drug costs, drug manufacturer price increases have forced health plans to create new benefit designs that create monthly premiums as low as possible.
Drug manufacturers encourage patients to disregard formularies and lower cost alternatives by offering coupons to help the patient cover that higher cost. This ultimately steers patients away from cheaper alternatives and towards more expensive brand drugs with higher cost sharing obligations, completely undermining the formulary offered by a plan sponsor. By definition, copay coupons target only those who already have prescription drug coverage and are not means tested. Considered illegal kickbacks in federal health programs, copay coupons are still permitted in the commercial market. Supporters of coupons say that they decrease costs for patients. While they can decrease an individual patient's cost at the pharmacy counter, they do not reduce actual costs. Coupons are temporary. The individual patient likely pays more when the coupon goes away instead of being started on the formulary drug from the start. I agree with what Mr. Andreessen said, that if drug companies are concerned about patients accessing medications, they should simply lower their prices. Just a couple facts before I conclude here. The prices for drugs with manufacturer coupons increase faster, 12 to 13% per year, compared to non-coupon drugs, which is 7 to 8% per year. And if Medicare's ban on coupons were not enforced, the cost to that program would increase $48 billion over the next 10 years. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. That concludes public testimony on the bill. We'll now move to member discussion and questions. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For members, you know, I'm going to be voting against this bill today, and I appreciate the conversation, but I would encourage all of my colleagues on the Commerce Committee to oppose this bill. Firstly, this bill did not go through the mandate review process that Representative Elkins, worked on this last year. And so we don't, to my understanding, have any idea of what this would do to health insurance premiums from the process that we set up last session. Also, from reading the bill, this also would apply to CGIP. So there will be a fiscal note on this bill, which I don't think we've received yet, or at least I haven't had a chance to see yet. And then, members, I think it's important to just underscore this point. You know, these copay coupons are designed by manufacturers to really undermine the ability of plans and PBMs to control drug costs through their formulary placement. And as has already been stated by some of the testifiers, you know, that's the reason that this type of program is actually illegal. It's against the law for Medicare programs. Is because it drives up the cost of health insurance and overall healthcare costs. And members, I really view this is a battle between pharma and health plans that we're talking about today, and just would encourage members to stay out of that fight and let these players negotiate to make sure that we're being able to control healthcare costs and not allow these types of programs, which are illegal in the Medicare level, to drive up health insurance costs here in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. I do appreciate your comments. I do want to respond to two of the things that you mentioned. The first, on the insurance mandate, it is my view after reviewing the bill and upon seeking and receiving advice from nonpartisan staff that it's not, the bill is not an insurance mandate and is not within the scope of the insurance mandate review process. With any bill that even comes close, I do my homework. I consult with our nonpartisan staff and make the determination about whether it fits within that. And I think this bill does not, and Representative Rasmussen, I'd be very happy to discuss that further with you off the record. The second thing is that CGIP may have a cost, but this is not a committee that's responsible for the budget of CGIP. The bill is being referred to Health Finance after this. And truthfully, I'm not sure if CGIP is Health Finance or if it's State Gov. But in either case, it's not Commerce. And so that is a question for a different committee. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Thank you, Representative Moran. And to the families who testified, thank you for being here today and sharing your stories. That's always an important part of any legislation, so I appreciate that. A question for Chair Moran. I'm hearing that you're talking about that this happens when there's no generic alternative available to these drugs, but I don't see in your bill any section that states that this would only apply when there's no generic alternative. Am I missing something, or can you speak to that?
Chair Moran.
Yes, thank you, Chair Stevenson and Representative Haley. So there is not a carve out, but often the impact comes to those who have a chronic disease or there is no alternative to medication, and the cost is high. So that's the point we want to address here. The out-of-cost pocket for these families where there is no other alternatives.
Representative Haley.
Oh, thank you, Chair Moran. I appreciate that, but I guess that's not clearly stated in the bill that would just apply in those cases. I will be a no vote today on this. I think this is, as Representative Rasmussen said, you know, a broader issue on the cost of drugs. And the legislature has worked on, you know, some efforts to that regard, but certainly we have more work to do there. And these coupon programs exacerbate the problem. So I will be a no vote today on it. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Chair Moran, any closing comments?
Yes, Chair Stevenson. I just want to say this, that, you know, we can spend time battling between what pharmacists and health plans want or do or not doing or how they're doing. But what we do know is that this is having a huge impact on individuals and their family and their children and their loved ones in a way that they have no option but to get the medication that they need to survive and live and thrive. And whether, you know, I heard folks say, well, members are not paying the payment, so it doesn't count. Whether that individual member is paying towards that copay, or they're using coupons, or uncle has decided to step in and to chip in, I think it should count. I think it's matter whether or not an individual have access to medication. And so, you know, these programs are, you know, they're often buried in fine print of health plans, requiring patients to pay thousands of dollars to hit their deductible and out-of-pocket before even receiving care. States like Virginia, West Virginia, Illinois, Arizona, and Georgia have already enacted similar legislation. So many other states are already introducing this legislation. Sir Stevenson and members, my hope is that Minnesota can join these other states in moving forward and allowing patients to get the care they need without going into bankruptcy. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Moran. With that, I renew my motion that House File 3611 as amended be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee, and Mr. Dockendorf will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Stevenson, aye. Vice Chair Cotizza-Watoon.
Aye.
Cotizza-Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, no.
O'Driscoll, no. Representative Barr.
No.
Barr, no. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Dabney.
Dabney, aye.
Dabney, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, pass.
Representative Haley.
Haley, no.
Haley, no. Representative Cagle.
Cagle, aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly. Representative Lilly.
I think he's trying to vote.
Lily, aye, sorry.
Lily, aye. Representative Lislegard is excused. Representative Lucero.
Lucero, no.
Lucero, no. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Farr.
Farr, no.
Farr, no. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, no.
Rasmussen, no. Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Tice.
Tice, no.
Tice, no. And Representative Elkins.
No.
Elkins, no.
With 9 ayes and 8 nays, the motion prevails and House File 3611, as amended, is recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you, Chair Moran.
Thank you, Chair.
Last item on our agenda today is my bill, so I will hand the gavel to Representative Katizabuchu.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. So members, as Chair Stevenson just mentioned, the last bill on our agenda is House File 2767. Chair Stevenson, would you like to move your bill?
I will move House File 2767 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. Chair Stevenson moves that House File 2767 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Chair Stevenson, would you like to move and describe the DE2 amendment?
I will move the DE2 amendment. Members, this amendment takes the underlying bill and makes it into the liquor omnibus bill. This committee has worked really hard, and I want to thank all of the members for their work on this throughout the interim when we had that massive hearing where we heard almost 30 bills, and then we've gone through session and heard even more bills, and a lot of members have brought great ideas, and we've had a lot of great conversations behind the scenes to assemble what I think is a very, very good bill that makes some necessary and needed reforms, both at the local level, but also at the statewide level. So maybe I'll withhold further comment until we get the bill totally marked up, because I know there's a few amendments here.
Very good. Members, any discussion to the DE2 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the DE2 amendment is adopted. Chair Stevenson, you have a further author's amendment, A6. Would you like to move and describe the A6?
I'll move the A6 amendment. This makes a couple of small and largely technical changes to the bill, just cleaning up some language.
Okay. Members, Chair Stevenson moves the A6 amendment to get the bill in the shape that he would like. Any discussion to the A6 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A6 amendment is adopted. Chair Stevenson, to your bill as amended.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. As I mentioned, we've now added in about 20 standalone liquor bills, which would make this the most significant liquor package that the legislature has adopted in many years. I think we've had a really good discussion among stakeholders on this, and I really am thankful for all of the work that everyone has been doing on this bill. That discussion is ongoing. You know, we're moving the bill out of committee today, as today is first deadline. Today, but I encourage people to keep talking and keep working. I think we've made a ton of progress. I think we're on the cusp of having a really strong agreement and a bill that allows our liquor industry to continue to grow and thrive, all segments, from all three tiers, from the retailers to the distributors to the producers. And I have enjoyed the discussion so far. I enjoyed traveling the state. I've been everywhere from Ely down to Rochester talking to people, from New Ulm to Minneapolis. And we're going to keep having discussions and keep moving forward. But this is a big step forward, and I appreciate everything that's gotten to this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, we do have a few amendments. We will begin with the A3. Representative O'Driscoll, would you like to move and describe the A3 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A3 amendment deals with the provision for 17-year-olds, or I should say allowing 17-year-olds to serve here in the state of Minnesota. As you recall, members, there is a two-year trial period that we were looking at on this. I wanted to put some comfort language in and shoring up language to put a brighter line for individuals, both inside and outside of the industry, what the intent is for this bill. And this is to take the product once it has been, if you will, the bottle top has been taken off of the beer bottle or the tap has been drawn, has been set on a server's plate along with the other beverages that the bartender would have been putting together. That is where this law begins. The server picks up their tray and brings it to the table and then clears the table in their normal course of business. What the A3 amendment does is it simply says the 17-year-old is not allowed to tend bar. And that's the part that I wanted to be clear on here, is that it is clearly the service of alcohol and not the preparation of the beverages as brought back by a server to bring back to the table of the customer. So, Madam Chair, that is the extent of it. I wanted to have clarifying language, and I appreciate members' support on the amendment.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Chair Stevenson, to that amendment?
Well, I think Representative O'Driscoll, you know, this is his underlying bill, and I appreciate the work that she's done to put it together. I think it's been thoughtful and careful, I think the approach has been very sound, and I think this language makes sense. So I would consider it a friendly amendment and urge adoption.
Very good. Members, any further discussion to the A3 amendment? None. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And any opposed? The motion prevails and the A3 amendment is adopted. Next, we move to the A4 amendment. Representative Tice, would you like to move and describe the A4?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would absolutely love to move this amendment. And what this amendment does is it helps out a racing facility near Bemidji to have on sale liquor license to kind of keep in line with what other tracks are doing around the state of Minnesota.
Right. Thank you, Representative Tice. Representative Stevenson.
And again, I appreciate the amendment that Representative Tice is bringing forward and the good conversation that we had about it yesterday. We've looked at it with other stakeholders, and I think it's a workable amendment, so I'm happy to ask members to vote yes on this amendment.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Members, any further discussion to the A4 amendment? Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I forgot the other half of the amendment. As I'm looking at my notes, the other half also allows an on-sale liquor license to resorts. And what this is basically kind of a, I want to say almost like a marketing piece, because sometimes folks will come into the office, speak with the owner of the resort, talk about, you know, how it's going, this, that, and another thing. Sometimes it might even result in the sale of many, you know, sweatshirts, T-shirts, and all that. But it's a nice time for folks to come in, talk to the resort owner, and have a beer. And so that's what we're looking at here. And this will affect about 100 resorts, mainly in Upper Minnesota. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Representative Tice, for the additional clarification. Members, any further discussion to the A4? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And any opposed?
Aye.
Seeing no opposition, the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Tice, you also have the A7 amendment. Would you like to move and describe that A7?
I would love to move this, Madam Chair. And also, you know, thank you a lot to Chair Stevenson and to Mr. Brown. They have been really good. This happened last minute, and it was a wonderful experience to be able to have this to come together for my city. The city of St. Cloud is looking to also include on sale malt liquor license to Whitney Recreation Center. Whitney is a really awesome area to go to. Typically, we'll talk about the Senior Center, but they do have events there and would love the opportunity to be able to keep in line with the other facilities that the city owns. And so that's why we're coming today with this bill for this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Tice. Chair Stevenson, to that A7.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Tice, for those kind words. And Mr. Brown is indeed excellent, and we are all very grateful for his great work on this committee. And yes, this amendment, I also think, is a great amendment that we should add to the bill. I'd encourage a yes vote.
Thank you. Members, any further discussion to the A7? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And any opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Members, any discussion to House File 2767 as amended? Representative O'Driscoll, you've unmuted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to extend a great appreciation to the committee for the work that we've done on this last year when we found ourselves in this COVID world. And we're going to be on Zoom. I had suggested to the chair that we wait until this year to do liquor so we had time to be able to do it right and not try to get a budget and get all these other things that we needed to do in the first year. I appreciate the chair taking my input on that. And as he has stated earlier, he has traveled the state this summer. We had in October a very robust conversation where he heard just about anything that had words that looked like alcohol in bills in the legislature this year. And we have been able to do a good job of vetting those. He has also worked with other stakeholders in what have traditionally been areas of conflict with barrelage and with vessel sizes and those things. And it appears that we may have, borrowing a legacy member's saying on this committee, peace in the valley. I guess I do owe royalties now to Chair David's for using those terms. That's what he keeps telling us anyhow. And I also appreciate you taking the additional ones that came today. I mean, we're just about ready to literally close the baggage door and start taxiing to the runway. And we had some last minutes that came on. So I appreciate your willingness and this team's willingness to work together to try to find a solution as you try to reopen Minnesota and give these folks an opportunity to be able to prosper once again. Madam Chair, thank you. And Chair Stevenson, thank you.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Members, not seeing any further discussion, I will allow Chair Stevenson his final comments.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll, for those very kind words. And thanks again to all members for their contributions to this bill. I think the last thing I'd like to say is that this bill is a compromise. And anytime you have a compromise, you're going to find things in the bill that you don't like and things in the bill you do like. And that's the tough thing about a compromise. But on balance, this is a bill that gets a lot done that people have been trying to do for a very long time in a way that has spectacularly broad buy-in from stakeholders. And we have an opportunity in passing this bill, not just to get some work done, but also to set the stage for peace, not just for 1 year, but for a period of time, for 5 years, where we can allow the liquor industry to grow and do their own thing and not be pounding down our doors at the SOB every year asking for changes. And I think that's both good for us and it's good for them. So I ask all members today, you may not like every provision in the bill, but understand that the stakeholders worked really hard to get to this point, to achieve this compromise, and that this presents the opportunity to have a stable liquor regulatory regime in Minnesota that everyone can live with for the next 5 years. And so I'll ask for members to support that compromise approach this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Members, Chair Stevenson renews his motion that House File 2767, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Stevenson, aye. Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, aye.
O'Driscoll, aye. Representative Barr.
Aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Dabney.
Dabney, aye.
Dabney, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley.
Pass.
Representative Cagle.
Cagle, aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Representative Lislegard is excused. Representative Lucero. Representative Lucero. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Farr. Representative Farr.
Farr, aye.
Farr, aye. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, no.
Rasmussen, no. Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Tice.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye. Representative Haley. Representative Lucero. Representative Lucero.
There being 14 ayes and one nay, the motion prevails, and House File 2767, as amended, is recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Mr. Chair, a virtual toast to you, whatever members may choose to drink on this Friday afternoon, evening. And with that, members, the meeting is adjourned.